Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
People of the audience, please welcome your host for this evening, Joe Devine. Hello! Good God. Hello there. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. There's so many of you here, isn't there? Goodness gracious me. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. This is the TIFO podcast live. We've got a fun evening for you this evening. That's a bit of an over-exaggeration. We've got a football podcast for you this evening. There will be actual podcast football stuff discussed in the first half, so sorry about that for anyone who's here just for fun. But let me tell you what's going to happen this evening. They told me I wouldn't be able to see any of you, but I can see all of you. Look at you. Hello. Who are you? I don't care who you are. Please stop talking. Okay. It's the beginning of the show. Please don't interrupt the show. There's two halves to this evening's performance. The first half will be a football podcast. Yeah, we're going to talk about football. It's the Champions League final this weekend. Is anyone excited? Yes, that's exactly how we feel also. It's very exciting, isn't it? Hello. There's women here. That's nice, because when I look at the YouTube analytics, I don't really see any women, so it's good that there's some in the crowd. That's nice for a gender balance. First half's a football podcast. Second half, we'll do a Q&A. So you can see on the screen, I think, behind me. Look, there's a hashtag there. Are you familiar with hashtags? Do you know how they work? They stopped sort of existing 2 years ago. Explain it. Well, on your social media application, on your mobile phone, on Twitter, please, specifically, because we won't be looking at any others. I don't have any of the others on my phone. But if you want to ask us a question for the second half of the show, please tweet with the hashtag TIFO Live. Yeah, ask us a question, and producer Steve Hanke will be checking those throughout the course of the first show. So in the second half, we'll do some of those. Very exciting. Soon I'll introduce some of the guests that we have here this evening. But if you all look around behind you, just over there where that clock is, you might be able to see him. It's Mr. Baby Boy Ruben Pinder. Give us a wave, Ruben. Yes. Hello. Are you okay? Have you eaten? That's good. Ruben's got a very important job for us this evening. Occasionally, he's going to hit the right or left key on his laptop. We've practiced that, haven't we? Yeah. We did want to have him on the stage, but unfortunately there are some theatrical union laws that prevent having a human baby on a stage. It's a shame, isn't it? Who'd have thought that? I didn't think that. But I can't believe you've paid money to come. This is being recorded. I know some of you here won't work in media or entertainment like I do. I'm good at it, aren't I good at it? What do you think? Is it going well so far? Big, yeah? 10. It's going 10. That's really, really good. Okay, exciting. But what you say and when you cheer, it will be picked up on a microphone. And people will listen to it later and they'll really enjoy it if you enjoy it. So I'll do my best. But also, if you do your best, it'll be very much appreciated. Because it's a two-way relationship, isn't it? And sometimes it will be your fault if you don't cheer. And you'll know when that is because I'll tell you, okay? But lovely Tom at the back is going to play for us now the flute to start the show. Tom, would you please play the flute? Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. That was very good. Almost as though we didn't rehearse it before. Well done, the audience. Now, first of all, let me please introduce to you a very special friend of mine, a wonderful long-term friend, and please give him a round of applause. It's Mr. Sebastian Stafford Bloor. Hey! Yeah, please take your seat. There you are.
Ah, guten Tag, Herr Stafford Bloor.
Wie geht's?
Big Ace is good, Joe Devine.
Oh, delightful. That's lovely to hear, isn't it? Okay, that's quite enough clapping. That's too much clapping. Yeah, we were good before, then it edged over. We'll come back. We'll work it out later. But please put your hands together again for producer Steve Hankey. Hey, Steve.
Hello, everyone.
You'll notice we've put Steve on a separate table, so as you, the audience, don't confuse him with us, the talents, because that would be a travesty if that happened. But another big round of applause, if you will, please, for the Goblin King himself. It's John McKenzie! Are you okay, John?
I'm okay, yeah.
Are you looking forward to this evening?
Oh, yes, immensely.
It's hard to keep the energy high sometimes with these people, isn't it? But you know who does keep the energy high, John?
Who's that?
It's JJ Paul the Buller! There we go. How are you doing, JJ? Okay?
Fantastic.
Lovely. It was a very warm round of applause. Thank you so much to the lovely audience here at the Leicester Square Theatre.
No.
That's not what I meant to say, but it's fine. Now, what is the other thing that we do, Steve, at the beginning of shows most of the time?
Most of the time we talk about, discussing the publication which has an immense amount of experts that give us incredible analysis and critique for the things that is passion for all of us. Is that what you're talking about?
It's The Athletic! Yay! It was a markedly smaller round of applause for The Athletic there, wasn't it? That's a shame. Okay. Little litmus test with the audience. How many of you are Athletic subscribers? Yeah.
That's better than last night. That is better than last night.
Been listening to the show for three years, haven't they? I've said it. How many times have I said it? Not even half the show. How many people here have unsubscribed to The Athletic at some point? Haven't they?
There's more of you than that. Come on.
Well, anyway. If you visit theathletic.com/TIFO, theathletic.com/TIFO, you can avail yourselves of a 30-day free trial. It's free! And half of you aren't using it. It's literally free. We'll make time later for you all to get on your phones and subscribe. But it'll be fine. Now, listen, we're going to do a football podcast now because that's what you've all paid to come and see, which is... It's kind of on you, if I'm being honest. It's sort of... Remember before when we discussed what was your fault and mine? The money's mine now. It's with me.
Yeah, we can try, but... You're done now. This is it.
So. The first thing we're going to talk about, though, is the Champions League final, which comes up on Saturday. Who here in the audience is excited about the Champions League final? Yeah, that's kind of how we feel also. It's not particularly exciting, is it? Is it... Seb Stafford-Bloor, a foregone conclusion, what would you say?
No, not a foregone conclusion. I'm looking forward to it. Have we got any Man City fans here at the moment?
Yeah! Wow. That's a fair representation of Man City fans, isn't it? There's one guy over there. Very proud, though. Well done for being so proud.
That's the only person who actually likes football, because the rest of us are all miserable, aren't we? Nothing good happens apart from for Man City.
Yeah, wasn't that weird? Not a foregone conclusion. I reckon that... So, like, you're going to have this in modern football. You're going to have the super team that progresses easily through the Champions League knockout rounds, and then you're going to have the story. And I think Inter Milan are a story. They're good... You know, people who've been watching TIFO for a long time will remember the two-man striker team video from about 4 years ago. And Inter Milan are probably... Sorry, Internazionale. I can feel you burning a hole in my head with... Yeah, sorry. Sporting Club de Portugal. Yeah. Red Star Belgrade. They're probably one of the only teams left in Europe who actually have a front two. So Lautaro Martinez and Dzeko. Not kind of... not probably a Shearer and Sheringham where one guy does one thing, another does another. It's two guys who react to each other and who can do all sorts of things and overlap and I reckon can cause a few problems at Man City, John.
John, if Inter can do it, how would they do it?
The way that you cause problems for Man City is that you sit deep, you don't press particularly aggressively. You pray to the gods and you hope that your striker scores there.
And how do you think Inter's gods fare this year? What do you reckon? I mean, they seem to have done relatively well so far.
Yes, I mean, they've had a fairly easy route to the final and they didn't start the season off particularly well, but they are coming into it in good form, which is something. I'm a bit worried about the lack of width they have in their out-of-possession structure.
Is that something you worry about?
Yeah.
How often do you worry about that? And when during the day do you worry about it?
I am employed to worry about out-of-possession structures, which, as everyone knows, are the most important structures in the game.
Whatever number John says here, however nuts it sounds, it will be real.
Yeah, so I think they're quite narrow out of possession because they have they play a 5-3-2. They'll probably sit their wing backs quite deep, and then they rely on their midfield three to shift side to side because they do have Edin Dzeko in that front three, and he's not the most mobile. So I think that Man City will be aware of this. They'll be able to pull them around and cause some problems by switching the play and building up in wide areas.
Okay. Well, something, JJ Ball, that we've heard about all before is Pep Guardiola getting to these big moments in football, in his football career, and then overthinking it. I mean, sometimes we think that's like an unfair assertion, but if he were to overthink it, how do you think he'd do that?
If you were to do it, I mean, you put all the players on one side of the pitch. You wouldn't see that coming. I mean, you could play Haaland in goal. I've got loads of these. None of them are good. Obviously, we'll know whether he's done the classic overthink on at the time when we see the team lineups and we'll see what he's done. But I'd imagine it'll be slightly different to... I think they'll... Because the Inter always play two up top. You think he'd want to have a three that stays there the entire time. To look after them, so you've always got one spare man. But I don't know, I mean, you might do something wild with it. What Inter will try and do is try and stop Erling Haaland from scoring, clearly, because that's the big threat. And Guardiola will build his team around either using Haaland to take players away from other people so that they can score, or he'll just tell him to eat one of the defenders.
Do you not, JJ, do you not think like this is the Man City team that you can't get wrong? It's like the... It's like a build.
Well, as I said, Seb, you can play them all in one wing.
You can play them all in one ring. But you also, it's like the IKEA manual of football teams. It's like, put this guy here, and he goes here because that's logical, because Kevin De Bruyne needs Erling Haaland and vice versa, and you're not going to play Rodri in goal or at right back, so he goes there. It's almost like, I don't say idiot-proof, because that sounds like it's aimed at Guardiola, but it's kind of, it's assembly-proof. You have to put everyone in their right slot. It's like the world's easiest jigsaw.
Well, they've had that team that played for a long time, and John loves talking about John Stones, so that's a thing that will be relevant to it. But Inter will know exactly how they're going to play, so you'd think... This is the thing with him overthinking it. So I think I might have said this before on different podcasts, but like the time that... Like Guardiola, when he overthinks it and he gets it wrong, people think he's an idiot. When he overthinks it and gets it right, he's a genius.
It's the people that are wrong, isn't it, really, if
they're
we're being honest?
Wrong, yes.
And I mean, you know, how stupid are they, really, honestly?
I mean...
No, they didn't like that. I was talking about you. But, John, you think that Pep Guardiola's kind of already fixed it this season, don't you? I mean, we got to the second half of the season, he tweaked some things, brought in a bunch of big lads, as you do in English football, and everything seems to be merry.
Yeah, I think he solved two problems. The first problem is Erling Haaland, who is obviously one of the... I think I've said on record that he's maybe the most efficient goal scorer of all time. You stick that player into a team who plays a very different style of football, which is much less about directness, and you have this final piece of the puzzle, which is, you know, ultimate directness. You want to make the most of having that player, and so that's been a problem that he's had to try and solve. And as you say, the big worry he has is that if you go too direct, there's a Juanma Leo quote which says, the quicker the ball goes forward, the quicker it comes back. And Pep Guardiola's always been worried about, you know, being too direct in attack because you don't want to leave yourself exposed at the back. But it feels as though this season he's overcome that by simply saying, just leaning into the directness and saying, OK, well, we will try and make the most of Erling Haaland, but we'll do that by adding extra protection at the back in the form of those beefy boys. And we've got Rodri and then...
Who's your favourite beefy boy?
Am I allowed to talk about John Stones?
Yeah. You can talk about whoever you want. I mean, you could say anything now and it would be, I can't really stop you because we're in front of 400 people. So
yes,
go ahead.
No, that's true. I am a legitimate football analyst, so I'll talk about John Stones. Yeah? Yeah? But yeah, John Stones is the other part of the solution, right? Because midway through the season, Pep Guardiola loses Joao Cancelo, goes off to Bayern Munich, and Pep's faced with a problem because he usually builds up with a flat back four in deep build-up and inverts one of his full-backs. Everyone knows what inverting full-backs are, right? He wouldn't come to this. They know, don't they?
I don't know. Should we take a test? Yeah. How many of you know what inverting full-backs are? How many of you were lying?
That's just a weird answer to that question, isn't it? Who knows what an inverting fullback is? And they go, woo!
Spooky
ghost.
What
do you tell them, John? Yeah. What do you do that in real life, you know, in a job interview or something?
Went, I always say woo! That when you say, like, how are you doing? Everyone goes, woo! Imagine that.
You're performing to a room full of ghosts.
How are you?
Woo!
It's a spooky ghost.
We're in danger of inverting ourselves here and going off topic, aren't we? So,
good Lord.
But the problem is he doesn't really have any fullbacks now who can invert. Inverting means just going inside and sitting in the midfield area. And it does a couple of things for you. It means you have an extra play in the midfield area, but also gives you a bit more cover if you lose the ball. What happened this season is that Pep Guardiola decided, well, rather than starting off with a flat four, moving the ball down the field and then inverting one of your fullbacks, why not just start off with a central midfielder already inverted fullback? So he brought in John Stones and... So that's the end of the story.
That's the magic end of the story.
But with John Stones, then what you have is you start off with three centre backs in deep build up, and you put Edison in between them. So you still kind of have a flat four anyway, but you've got two midfielders as well. It's really exciting.
It's like a trick, isn't it?
It is like a trick. But I think this has made a big difference because it has allowed him to get John Stones into that central build up area, but also gives you that extra cover to make sure when you are more transitional that you're not having any problems, of course. And when you're dropping out in a defensive situation, John Stones can drop back towards the goal rather than dropping into the fullback area. So all of that makes, you know, football solved.
When John watches football, if you're in the same room as John when he watches football, like he in our office, you can't, I think I told this story on the podcast, but you can't quite see each other's face. So you look at someone from the opposite end of the office and you can see a little bit of forehead and a computer screen.
When we're in
you
there,
can see
like
quite a lot of forehead.
Like an egg box.
It's mostly forehead from where I'm looking at.
50%.
Sometimes I think I'm looking in a mirror when he's in the office.
Holding a high five. Yeah. All you can see...
It's nice how they look out for each other, though, isn't it? Is it Larry David talking about the bold man's union? It's lovely.
It's that meme. It's the meme with the two muscle men.
Like, yeah,
fuck off with all your hair. All you can see is John reacting to football as it happens. And most normal people cheer or, you know, scream or shout or swear. What you hear from John is these little noises of kind of... It's not really appreciation or kind of, you know...
What are the noises,
then? It's sort of like this jumble of little words that don't mean anything. And it's like, kind of, oh, John Stones did a...
They laugh every time you do that. Try a different noise.
Don't turn me into another McKenzie.
You did this to me yesterday.
I know exactly what you're trying to do.
I forgot to ask John to woof at the beginning. Oh, John, will you give us a little woof?
I only woof at the beginning.
You only woof at the beginning?
Yeah. You're a serious football analyst.
I miss my only woof.
Yeah.
What a shame. Okay, fine.
If Guardiola does do an overthink and inverts something else, the meaning of inverted is placed or lying upside down. So, John Stone's on his head.
There'll be more expert football analysis
win
in the
second
half.
If
as well.
Someone's got his legs all high.
It's easier to kick a ball than head a ball, right?
Exactly, so, especially upside down.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you find it strange how he references his own overthinking now? When he's in a press conference ahead of a big game, he'll have a little sort of witty aside. Like, oh, yeah, better I overthink this one. Which is kind of like, I don't even... Is that self-deprecating?
We kind of do like, that in the office, though, when these people leave horrible comments about us, you know. So it's sort of the same, isn't it?
Yeah, we just block them and remove them from the channel.
Yeah.
He is definitely reading Twitter now, though.
You think so?
Yeah.
He does seem to be more aware of what people say about him than some other... I mean, obviously, all football managers have media managers that bring them desired things, and some of them will want more and less, but it does seem like Pep Guardiola wants a whole novel brought to him every day.
Well, I think you can tell from things he's saying that he's definitely reading newspaper reports about him and articles, and is on Twitter, and he also definitely listens to football podcasts. And he's here tonight!
If you say you should be able to see his forehead somewhere, I think. Yeah, anyway. The last thing here on the Man City Inter Champions League final, JJ, is for you. You specifically asked to talk about Andre Onana, didn't you?
Yes, I think he's good.
Well, that's great. We'll bring that section to an end now. This is going to be... We did a show last night as well, which was pretty... It was pretty good, to be honest. It went pretty well.
You used some of the same jokes already, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know...
Getting away with it.
There's a couple of people here that said that they came yesterday.
Is Nick Miller here?
Did the Nick Miller man come again?
Oh!
No, he's around here.
Where is he?
Has anyone here this evening been brought for the first time and hasn't ever seen the podcast before? I'm so sorry. I really am. And you're in the front row as well, aren't you? And you were one of the women I was talking about at the beginning. And I said, I'm never so sorry. I'll try to stop the show for your benefit at various different points to let you know what's going on. Just because otherwise it's going to be really boring for you. So when I asked John to woof before, I'll just explain that to you. Sometimes John woofs and people seem to really enjoy it, or at least I do. So if you're lucky, you might hear him woof a bit later. But we'll chat again. Don't worry about these analysts. You keep telling yourself that. Anyway, the reason I say we did a show yesterday was because there's fresh news in the football world today that we're going to discuss, and we haven't really prepared, so, you know, it's the same as any week, I suppose. I'm hearing from my sources on the internet that Lionel Messi, is this true? Is moving to Inter Miami?
That was the Athletic plug, wasn't it?
I don't read the Athletic. I haven't got time. I'm in meetings with people from The Athletic all day. I'm sick of them. To be clear, they are terrific writers, and you should all claim the 30-day free trial.
Really,
but as people, they really make meetings drag.
Well, the worst part about those meetings is that when you start the meeting, they say, hi, nice to see you all. Just to let you know, if you go to this link...
It's kind of a sort of a circle jerk, isn't it, really? Yeah. Now, what were we talking about? Inter Miami. That's not the term I wanted to use. I was trying to think of the proper term.
Now, in the studio, you could edit that out. Yeah, you could change that in the studio, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could have changed that. It's one of the things that Steve Hanke would have cut out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't. You've got no power over me.
I feel very unprotected.
I can say circle jerk as many times as I want. And maybe I'll say it again later. Yeah.
But this little desk is so funny. He's all the way over there by himself.
Yeah. Not part of the team. No. Inter Miami. Messi very much part of the team. What the hell's gone on there? Well, America!
America has gone on there a little bit. I mean, obviously, when we talked about this backstage, we talked about this question going to somebody else. But
oh, did we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It doesn't say that in my plan.
Well,
Who was I supposed to ask this to?
But it wasn't me.
It also wasn't me.
Yeah, it was JJ.
I know who he is.
Oh, right. What you'll see now. Remember what I said before about when you weren't in the media and you weren't in entertainment? Don't worry. What's going to happen is there's going to be a nice little cut here. And the people listening, they'll never know this happened. Ready? There's fresh news in the football world. Imagine. People, their faces, they already know what I'm going to say. Such is the palpable nature of the hot news. And it is that Lionel Messi, JJ Bull, is moving to Inter Miami. What's gone on there?
I don't know.
Oh. Does anyone from the audience want to talk about Lionel Messi? Is that best football player of all time?
I've seen some tweets about it.
Yeah? What do they say, that he's moving to Inter Miami?
He's moving to Miami.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although there's some theories that he might then be loaned to Barcelona for a year or something like that, because there's all this stuff that Barcelona can't give him. They're fucks, right? So they don't have any money. So they're trying to work out how they can get him in, but on the sly. Really.
Yeah. It's always quite annoying when that happens, isn't it? There's a little subterfuge in the plot there. What do you think, though? I mean, if he were to move to America, I know you said before you didn't want me to ask you the question,
but
I've expended all of my other resources here, and it really hasn't gone that well. I mean, he could really go anywhere still, right? We know he's well into his 30s, but he's still a terrific footballer. He could have played anywhere in the world. I mean, what's the draw of America for someone like Messi?
Maybe the draw of the city of Miami. It's an amazing place to live. Someone from South America, presumably. And also...
he's definitely from South America, right? I think he was born in Argentina.
Which is in South America.
Yeah. Presumably.
Yeah, possibly.
I've never been there.
The enjoying was the presumably, not the actually, he is presumably from South America. Like, serious football fucking analyst.
I just think we should be careful with the words we use, you know? Joe.
I wonder whether, what does he want, though? Like, if you're Lionel Messi... You won the World Cup, you won the Champions League, you've won the Copa America, you've won I don't know, 9 league titles.
He wants presumably a really big milkshake. That's what they do, those in America, don't they?
There's a new one that's got 2,600 calories.
Yeah, you were talking about that yesterday.
2,600 calories?
I think you could have that and you'd be fine. Yeah. I could. Yeah. I would die.
Yeah.
Isn't the 2,600 calorie milkshake just more milkshake than a normal milkshake? Isn't it just bigger?
I mean, I guess any milkshake would be 2,600.
Is it more dense? Has it got more?
It's the sugar content, John. That's when you read the back of the packets there. It says the sugar. That's what I'm looking for, the highest possible density of sugar. If it's not just a straight sugar mountain, then...
It doesn't say sugar density, surely, on the back of a milkshake.
I don't know. I'm just saying things. But do talk about football, though, Seb.
Can I take the second question? Can I do the Bellingham to Real Madrid?
Yeah, if you could make it last for 20 minutes before we run out of stuff. You can do that.
I can do more on Messi.
No, it's okay. We'll move on. Go on. The next section here is the other big news. I mean, it's a piping hot news day. It really is. Days like this don't come along very often. And I tell you what, it's ideal not to be in the office all day when this is happening. Because Jude Bellingham is apparently moving to Real Madrid.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Hanky has done it again. So last night when we did this...
What's he done?
Last night we did this, we talked about Dzeko and Martinez at Inter Milan and how that might work in the Champions League. And Steve Hanky exposed the fact that he hadn't actually listened to the first 10 minutes of that by adding it to the plan later.
Steve Hanky.
Done the same thing again. It's there.
How could you do that?
Where?
It's in green. You're highlighting it now.
Yeah, Seb, you like Dzeko Martinez, and I greened it when
Seb's
it was
got it wrong. Just play along so that for the audience.
Whatever you say, Seb. Whatever you say.
Seb's misunderstood like he does on a daily basis. But look, Jude Bellingham's moving to Real Madrid, isn't he, Seb? That's what it... See there? That's what it says. What do you think about that?
I like it. Jude Bellingham is one day, I think, going to win the Ballon d'Or. He's going to be the best player in the world, genuinely. I think the more you learn about him, not obviously just the football bits, because I think everybody's seen the highlights and everybody knows what he can do when he plays for England, Dortmund, and now Real Madrid. When you learn about who he is as a person and the way he's regarded by not just like people who are dependent on him now, like agents and family members and close friends, people who he hasn't seen for years or people who he's come into contact with because of charity work or... because he's been coached by them at some point, or he's come back to kind of support his brother at Birmingham, and he's, you know, loyal to sort of the club and the fans there. Like, the more you learn about him, the more you realise he's a perfectly balanced professional footballer. He's going to do amazing things.
You really saw that in the World Cup, didn't you, at the where he goes over to comfort the players that missed the penalties, and it's him, he's the 19-year-old acting like the captain.
Yeah, because I thought it was fascinating. So we were watching England against France in the World Cup, and if England won, I had to do a very scary media appearance the next day, which made it quite conflicting. Do you remember that?
No.
Was it England's most haunted houses?
No, it was...
Because I'd watch it.
No, one of us was going to have to go on to Sunday breakfast with Tim Lovejoy.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, and so whilst obviously you always want England...
He's in the scary house!
It was quite conflicting when Harry Kane missed the penalty, because he thought, then I don't have to go on television in front of millions of people.
It's Channel 4, it's not millions, is it?
And luckily for you, nothing else in your career has led to you having to talk in public in front of lots of people.
So
we were discussing, by the way, last night. I'm going off script now, but JJ and I were discussing last night how calm and confident you are as a person in front of an audience, which is interesting because of how you display to me. But then JJ pointed out it's because you went to private school, it's just bred into you, isn't it, to be this confident?
I didn't.
And calm
I didn't
in front
say
of
that.
People. Wasn't it? What did you say? Was that me that said that?
I said that.
Somebody said that. It's John.
I'm the one with the chip on their shoulder. Yeah.
It was John. And I think it was. Did you have special lessons to be confident?
Yes, yes, yes.
When you look at these people, what do you see? The great unwashed?
No, I don't even see.
Is it pond scum? I mean, you know, some of them look quite poor. Do you think they're poorer than you? Yeah. Put your hand up if you went to private school. Oh, it's Mr. 10. You're the guy who held 10 up to me when I said, how's it going so far? Yeah. Very good. It's good you paid for school. Well done. Anyway, please continue. My point was more a compliment, of course, wrapped in a horrible, mean thing to say. But it was a compliment that you're such a confident speaker. What were you saying?
Well, I mean, obviously, when we went to private school, we had lessons where, you know, they handed out the free money and the opportunities and, you know...
I knew it.
It was the good old days when, like, all you needed was a well-directed letter to walk into a kind of a six-figure job, and that was just a better time in the world. Jude Bellingham is...
They're not one of you.
So... If you watch him, if you go back to that game against France, and if you can bear watching the missed penalty...
Somebody's left their alarm on their phone. Who is it? Who is it? Is it you? Wearing the shirt that's unbuttoned too far down. Come on, man.
And what's the alarm for?
Do the button up.
The alarm is for the bins.
For
the bins
out. Oh, fuck! He probably actually will. That was very good.
He's got good energy tonight, JJ.
He has got good energy.
Yeah.
Just thinking the people listening won't have any idea what happened, but that's fine. That was a special treat for the people here. Thanks, audience plant guy, that we definitely put there to keep your fucking phone on, mate. Right.
Looks a bit like Ben Foster, doesn't he?
He does a little bit, doesn't he?
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
It's got that sort of smug vibe about him. Thank you for coming.
He paid 20 quid for that.
That is true. Thank you for coming. Yeah, we'll spend it well. Jude Bellingham.
JJ's got the Jude Bellingham Wikipedia page up, so maybe you should ask him.
Oh, great. Let's just read that.
That's how I do it. Well, I normally.
His middle name's Victor.
Yeah. He's an English professional footballer.
Presumably.
Do you know how... That's called tipping the balance.
Right, brother.
All right, okay, listen, let's move on from Jude Bellingham because we can't make any headway.
We can't do that.
Oh, you looked a bit sad. Did you want to say something, James?
No, not really.
he's fine.
It was just a bit.
He wanted to talk about Messi too and you didn't let him.
Yeah, well, you know,
I think that's probably fine.
What are you going to do? Yeah. We've got one more thing to do this half, which is to talk about who we think the best Premier League manager of the season. The best Premier League manager of the season? The Premier League manager of the season.
Both work. Have some confidence.
I'll say them both in a row.
You didn't go to private school, but have some confidence. Just imagine you did. Just, you know.
He's very confident today, isn't he? This is not Sam. I like this.
Just, you know, think that I'm wrong automatically because I'm not you. And, you know, your
parents... Oh, that's... Yeah, thanks. You're clicking me back into my normal way of being. That's right, yeah. Premier League manager of the season. Now, it seems like a foregone conclusion, doesn't it? Because everyone here is probably thinking it's going to be Pep Guardiola. I mean, there's a pretty good argument for that. Now I'm afraid to ask any of you. Who wants to answer this one about Pep Guardiola?
What is the question?
Oh, just, I mean, do you think he's the Premier League manager of the season? There's a bit of competition for it.
Yeah, he's. I would throw Roberto De Zerbi in there because Brighton have been fun to watch. Marcus Silva, Fulham. Oh, we've got a Fulham fan.
There's one Fulham fan. Another little woo from the Fulham fan.
Is that Marcus Silva?
I think, you know, Roy Hodgson did a really good job at Palace, I think.
That's true. Ruben the baby boy Pinder will be pleased that you mentioned Roy Hodgson.
Here he goes.
Is that Roy back there?
No, that's me.
Oh, right.
He is here, though.
Roy Hodgson's here?
Yeah.
Where is he? Back there with you in the cubby?
One sec.
Fetch Roy.
Well, here I am, Joe.
Roy!
Oh, hello, JoJo. It's been a while.
How are you doing?
Very, very well. Thanks for having me on the T5 podcast live. And thank you to Seb for mentioning my terrific job.
Roy Hodgson, thank you so much for joining us. What a surprise, a delight to have you here. Now, Roy, I mean, you're being discussed here as a potential manager of the season, and nobody thought it was possible, but just tell us, how did you do it at Crystal Palace?
Well, it wasn't easy, but when you've got players like Iberici, Eze, and Wilfred Zaha... Makes it much easier, and I hope that a serious football analyst like John McKenzie would recognise as much.
Thanks, Roy.
Does anyone have any questions for Roy?
I'm just glad you're here. Thanks for that. It's great.
Roy, what's your favourite thing to eat?
Fuck it. Well, I wasn't expecting that question. We could have rehearsed that, couldn't we?
I didn't hear it. People were laughing too loudly at you, Roy. What did you say you like to eat?
I said I wasn't expecting that question. Maybe a roast dinner.
Yeah, there we go.
Fish and chips.
That sounds about right. Any other questions for Roy now? We know he's not expecting them.
Who is the best Premier League manager of the Premier League season, the best ever?
That's a tough question. I'd have to give a lot of credit to Gary O'Neill at Bournemouth, actually. He's done a terrific job.
That's a good point from Roy. Thank you very much, Roy.
You're very welcome.
Let's talk about Gary O'Neill at Bournemouth, because I think he's oft unmentioned. And in fact, we didn't mention him before Roy picked us up on that there. But John, he's had a terrific season, hasn't he?
Yes. Why are you asking me this?
I just want anyone to talk about football.
Well, I'll talk about Gary O'Neill if you want. Do you want to talk about
Gary O'Neill? You talked about him yesterday.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, Gary O'Neill, so when he took over at Bournemouth, they look absolutely done. Like, Scott Parker had thrown players under the metaphorical bus, basically saying they were all shit.
He said at the beginning that it like, wasn't possible, didn't he?
Yeah, he said they didn't invest any money into the team over the summer, and Scott Parker says, well, there's absolutely no chance. No good manager can possibly keep these alive without... alive? The spooky haunted house. No one can keep the Bournemouth players alive if there's no investment. They didn't get the investment. They started getting absolutely pumped by different teams. In comes Gary O'Neill and does really clever things. Like, he lost a lot of games against big teams, but they're doing clever things to try and beat them. I think it was maybe Liverpool, but who did they beat? It was good. Do you remember? Liverpool, there we go. Thank you.
Oh, an answer from the audience. Liverpool 1-0. Thank you, audience members.
We should get them up, shouldn't we?
Yeah, much probably better. Should, yeah.
I could have. Well, I have that's why they're stuff.
They're also serious football analysts.
Anyway, yeah, so he did that. Well done, Gary O'Neill.
Yeah, that's well good. Done to Gary O'Neill. Yeah. Let's go through a couple of other teams as well before we finish the first half. John, talk about Arsenal's season for me a little bit, will you? Because, I mean, we were all so excited about it, weren't we? We were all thrilled at the proposition that they might win, weren't we? Everyone wanted that to happen. And everyone was very, very sad when that didn't happen. But what happened for them towards the end of the season there?
Well, they did start dropping off defensively towards the end of the season. A lot of people will say William Saliba was part of that. That is true. But they were getting worse with him in the team as well. Their set pieces were pretty poor, particularly after the World Cup. And I think they sort of went the same way that they went last season, largely because they don't have a huge squad of depth that they can pick from. But they were great this season, weren't they? They were good, weren't they? Yeah.
Got many Arsenal fans in? Yes, very, very many of you. That's funny, wasn't it? It was funny what happened. Did you enjoy it? I enjoyed it. I did. I used to work in a pub in Islington when you'd come in all the time, wouldn't you? And watch football and order drinks from me and be rude and smug and talk about how good Arsenal were. And they weren't, were they? They weren't good. No.
John, what do you think of Man United season?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
That's in the second half. We've got that in the second half. Oh, yeah, completely easy on that. But tell me a little bit about Spurs, Seb. You got a new manager, though.
That's in the second half as well.
I'm in the bit now, so should I do the bit?
Do you want me to do the bit?
I can do
it. You've got 7 minutes to do the bit. We'll all sit patiently.
Okay.
And you can talk about Spurs for 7 minutes. No one's going to interrupt. And we'll just see what happens for 7 whole minutes. Yeah?
I can do it.
You actually can.
I probably could do it. I feel like I came quite close to hating my football club this season. I think that the most toxic thing you can have in the game is Antonio Conte. But if you're a fan, what you want is you don't need to win. You don't need trophies. You don't need expensive players. You don't even need a shiny new stadium. Or commercial deals, or NFL franchises, or see little go-kart tracks that go under the stadium, or anything else that Daniel Levy wants to pump into Tottenham Hotspur. What you need is just, you get to match day and you think, that's fun, I might watch that, or I might go to that, or I might slightly enjoy that. What you don't need is to not look forward to that, but also to watch a game, be bored by it, to be told afterwards that it's your fault that you're bored by it, your fault that actually... what you're watching is shit, and you kind of deserve it because you're a club of losers and the mentality that pervades your awful group of losers is also your fault as a fan, because what says defeat like paying the highest prices in the whole Premier League, if not Europe, for it? I was going to say Conference League football, but he didn't even deliver that, did he?
I didn't realise Joe was coaching Spurs this season.
Do you want more? Shall I can keep going.
No, I'm glad you're enjoying it so much, though. It's nice. Well, we're going to talk about Postecoglou in the second half, so hopefully that'll be a bit more positive, you know. But let's do a little bit of Chelsea as well, because, I mean, we're going to anticipate presumably a better next season. We'd have for it to be much worse, wouldn't it, JJ?
It could get worse.
It technically could get worse.
Yeah.
But it probably
won't.
There
are so many things that could happen.
Yeah.
Should I? No. So, obviously, they hate to get rid of loads of players in the summer. It's very complicated because you can't have training sessions for 1,800 people at the same time. It's just too many.
It's funny that I know we talked about that earlier in the season, but it is funny when you think about how stupid and simple those sorts of things are. Like, you would think more players would be good, but then you can't fit them on the pitch and it becomes a massive problem in a way that I'd never considered before.
Well, much like the way the Guardiola could play all the players on one wing, if Pochettino can find a way to play 23 people at the same time,
maybe squeeze two into one shirt. What do you think? Yeah. Might hamstring them a little bit, but...
and if they're on each other's shoulders, who's winning that header?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Obviously, they'll be back, surely, you'd think, next season with Pochettino making them better, you'd hope. But he'll have to organise all his training sessions, but he'll have to organise them and either leave out loads of people, which will cause loads of hassle. It'll be really hard to manage the dressing room purely, keep the club happy, which is part of the management job. That's not even something he'll probably have to deal with, right? It'll be people upstairs who don't even know who they are. So, yes.
Great stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. What about you, John? What do you think about Chelsea?
What do you think?
I mean, Romelu Lukaku's going back, isn't he? I'm yet to get to the bottom of whether it's possible that he'll play for them or not.
Well, I'm led to believe that he didn't enjoy his time at Chelsea, so there's a possibility he might not be coming back. But he's one of the best number nines in the world, and we've talked a lot about how Chelsea need a number nine, so it does seem to make sense that Pochettino should try and do his utmost to try and keep Lukaku at the club. I think we had a conversation about this yesterday about how... Antonio Conte ruins football clubs because...
And people, by the way. And human beings, John.
Burnt out husks of emotion.
Lives, yeah. Souls.
But it's not just because of his antagonism, it's because he
it's
makes...
quite
all
a lot
of...
because of the antagonism.
Do you want us to talk about it?
You carry on.
It's not just because he ruins the all enjoyment, but he builds these squads where you basically have to play... back three systems. It's very easy to make a squad into a back three squad, but it's quite hard to make a squad that's a back three squad into a back four squad.
That's nice, isn't it? I like what you said there. That was good. It wasn't funny, but it was good football analysis.
Should we make a video on it?
Yeah, why not? Do you want to discuss that now on stage? What would the title be?
Why Antonio Conte breaks football teams?
It's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's test in the room. How many of you would watch that if you saw it pop up on the? Let's never do it. Let's not do it. Let's deprive them of it.
I've written it down.
Oh, you've written it down already? Yeah. That actually is going to happen then, isn't it? Great. Okay. Well, very exciting.
Fine. Any ideas, George?
At least something valuable's come from the first half of this show, hey? Yeah. We'll be back now for the second half, where there'll be a huge Q&A. Very exciting. We'll take a look at some of your questions in the halftime break and pick all the good ones and ignore all the really, really shit ones, which most of them will be. Yeah, you like that one, didn't you? You sent a shit one already? No. Well, you haven't sent one. Get your phone out. What did I told you about the hashtag at the beginning. Come on, get your phone out. Oh, you were in the empty seat, weren't you? Yeah. Good Lord, he was at the bar. Fine. Well, anyway, thank you so much for being so welcoming to us for the first half. And we'll return in about 15 minutes. Make yourselves available at the bar. That sounds like I'm instructing the bar staff. That's not what I meant to say, bar staff. I'm very sorry. I meant, please go to the bar, buy drinks and enjoy yourself, socialise. Use the toilet if you want to. It would be a good time to use the toilet. And we'll be back in 15 minutes for more football chat. Thank you. Hey.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Please welcome back to the stage the TIFO Football Podcast! Yay!
Oh, how lovely all to see you again. It was a fun break, wasn't it? Did you all enjoy the break? Who used the toilet? So many toilet users, isn't that? That's lovely, isn't it? Hello. That's my wife over there, I think. If it's not, I'm very sorry to the woman that I pointed out that looks a lot like my wife, but... All right? How's it? Do you think it's going okay? She says it's going all good, everyone. Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, listen, we've got an exciting second half of a show here to display to you this evening. And we're going to start with something a little bit fun. A little bit of fun.
Okay.
Lots of people send us nice comments. So we're going to get to... We're going to do a few later as well. Some bit meaner ones a bit later on in the show. But we're going to start with a few nice ones. So, lovely Tom at the back. Could you bring the lights down just a little bit there? Start the lovely jazz bossa nova. And Reuben the Baby Boy Pinder, it's his starring role. Reuben, it's time to shift over to the first funny comment. Yes, and this one comes in from Nicholas Mazzara. Nicholas Mazzara says, found it a bit odd that they started talking about football during a podcast about piles. And it is odd, isn't it? But Nicholas said, these guys seem to know their stuff, so I didn't mind that much. That's fantastic. Goofy8907 says, the piles info is actually very helpful for all of us. Getting those issues can be painful, and it's easy to avoid. It's better people know now, instead of finding out the hard way about piles. Yeah, piles are funny, aren't they? Robert Close, this isn't a funny comment, I just really enjoyed this one. Robert Close says, Babe 2, Pig in the City, being directed by George Miller of Mad Max fame, is my favourite piece of cinema trivia. And it's my favourite piece of cinema trivia now as well. Imagine that, Babe 2, Pig in the City, and Mad Max.
I mean, the part where Babe ate all the people in the city was and destroy the buildings. Remember that bit?
I do. It was horrifying.
And
yeah.
he didn't. And then he didn't. He made his password so no one can get in. He went, and then no one can get in. And then all dinosaurs come out.
That's right. There's a third film in there, isn't there? That wasn't directed by George Miller, but you know, it's an excellent film. It's
Jurassic Babe.
Yeah.
That's a different film. That one is. I think I've seen that one. Yeah.
The next. I've left my water backstage. Can someone bring me my water? Is that
got
a possibility?
You.
Oh, you got one for me. Fine. Oh, thank. Oh, look, so many people bringing me water. Thank you. I don't want that. Yeah, thank you. This next comment here comes in from Sir Nigel Garage. Nigel Garage says, "Hang on, where did Alex go? Did I miss something?" Yes, you did. You did miss something. Yeah, you did. Next comment from T. Alex Stewart should be there. Next comment from Zephyr's Alex. I miss Alex. Alex. Alex, 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 Alex. I miss Alex. We want Alex back. I miss Alex. Well, listen, I've got a very special surprise for you this evening. It's extra special, yeah? Because it's in person. He's not here. He is here! It's Alex Stewart! There he is! Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right?
Yeah, good, thank you.
What have you been doing?
What, this evening or generally?
No, for the last year, what have you been doing?
I've been working for an analytics company.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Big real boy, is he?
Yeah.
There he goes. Well, listen, we're delighted to have Alex Stewart here with us this evening. And we're going to direct some questions to him later as well. So if you haven't already asked a question with the hashtag, as we talked about before, and Alex's appearance here has inspired you, you can direct them at him. Steve Hanke will be monitoring the live feed. But the first question I have here from the Q&A, Simone, this one's to you, Seb.
Ooh, okay.
Simone wants to know... There's no point lying, because I already said we prepared this one at the first time. We said we were going to talk about Pasta Cod Glue.
Yes.
Now, you've told us how unhappy you are about all the things that have happened in the past and how sad they made you.
Well, football-related, not like
yeah.
That.
We could do a whole different show, couldn't we?
Years of just misery and unhappiness and regrets. No,
you're getting money at school.
Yeah.
But tell us about Pasta Cod Glue, because it seems like it could be an exciting new era for the Tottenham Hotspurs.
School was great, actually. It really was fantastic. It is good. It is good. It's also, I think what matters is as I get older, as I approach 40, I don't care about the winning and I don't care about the losing. I just want to quite like the person managing the team. Because you don't want to feel like when the team wins, it serves some terrible agenda and it allows somebody...
Imagine feeling that. It's hard to know if there's anyone in the audience that could imagine that. What that would feel like on a... Yeah, big woo. Big woo.
Imagine if you were, working for the benefit of something truly terrible.
You kind of are, aren't you, in a way?
Yeah. It's good. It's good. It's also, if you... And you can find a lot of different types of Ange Postecoglou content. But if you haven't seen his... It's Craig Foster, isn't it, the interview?
Yeah.
Have a look at that one. I want that guy. I want that guy.
And what does he say in that?
I don't want to ruin it for people, but it's confrontational. And it's the kind of old school media theatre that we probably don't have enough of.
He spends a lot of time going, we'll get the password, and then all dinosaurs come out.
Search for Jurassic Babe. That's what you want to do.
Jurassic Ange, is that what you said?
Speaking of Jurassic, he is very old, though. I thought for a long time, because I don't know anything about football, I don't know if you've noticed, but I thought he was a young man because everyone talks about him like they like him, and people only do that about young people. But it turns out he's very, very old.
He is quite old. He's been around a long time. He's played for a high level, played for Australia, managed in Japan. He's managed in, obviously, Scotland most recently, and now in England and his native Australia. So he's experienced, but good communicator. Most importantly, because whenever an Australian or, more importantly, probably an American comes into the league, everybody makes fun of them and is like, oh, you should be going back to baseball or whatever. And obviously...
It is funny, though.
It is funny, and so... Ange Postecoglou doesn't care about any of that. And that's kind of, that's an important quality. And it feels like after what feels like a decade of Conte, Mourinho before him, it feels like there's been so much media management and so little actual coaching substance that it's a relief. It's okay. A relief. I'm excited. I'm not quite back. I still need a few more weeks of other things other than football in my life.
Sulking.
Yeah, sulking, moaning, complaining. My wife's in the audience, so I don't.
Is she? What is it that you do when you're not doing football stuff, Steph? Because of all the people I know, you seem to live and breathe it, don't you? Like the cliche goes.
I mean, I'm at a loss, really. I mean, but this is the point I've arrived at. My joy has been sort of, I don't even know how you describe this motion. But
well,
it's been
I'll tell you how you describe that.
Stolen.
Thank you.
Richarlison. Yeah. No, I don't know, but I'm looking forward to finding out.
Yeah, okay.
Something other than
can
football.
I ask Seb a question about it?
Yeah, of course you can, yeah.
Do you think, because you know how everyone loves Postecoglou all of a sudden,
yes.
And a lot of people will now suddenly feel like they know loads because he's been in the news and all stuff.
Yes.
So I bet a lot of Spurs players wouldn't know who the fuck he is,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Do you think that the media raising his profile will suddenly mean he'll have more authority going in straight away than he might have done had there not been nothing else going on in this last week when he was hired?
Maybe. I think players tend to make up their minds individually. Like, instinctively, when a new manager comes in, there's a kind of a mental calculation. Do I want that? Do I not want that? Do I sulk about it? Do I try and get a transfer? Do I commit myself to the process? There's a couple of players at Tottenham who, it doesn't matter who the coach is at all. They're too worried about, like, where am I going to play next season? And can I get my move to Real Madrid, for instance, right? So I don't think so. I think, but then...
Eric Dyer.
No. Bless Eric Dyer's little heart. No. Like, I think it's almost the point where it's good. Like, if you bring someone like that in and you have people that are going to reflexively distrust his methods because of where he comes from and where he's coached in the past, they need to go too. It's a cleansing moment. It's good.
Yeah. Jill asks from the audience, in relation to Spurs, which current players who are out on loan could Postecoglou potentially...
None of them. No.
I'm so sorry, Jill. Seb wouldn't even let me finish the question.
Jill. I feel like that's... I feel like...
Speak to Jill directly.
Jill, listen.
Jill paid 20 quid for this.
They are... Jill needs the truth, John. They are all shit. All of them. They're all known for a reason. They actually couldn't be given away on a permanent basis. They keep getting loaned out. They keep getting... they keep coming back.
Like, yeah, but Dyer's going to Real Madrid.
Worlds.
And Dumbello.
Yeah. And he's in the audience.
The same man that shouted in Dumbello also cackled immediately afterwards.
That's not the laugh of a balanced personality, is it? That's a cackle.
Well, let me tweak Jill's question here and address it to John as well, because you were saying in the first half a lovely little thing you said. Do you remember I said I liked it,
what you said?
It was that it's easy to go turn your squad into a back three squad, but it's quite hard to come out of that. Postecoglou, as far as I'm aware, doesn't play with a back three, so how is he going to manage that when Spurs seem to have only players that can play at wing-back?
Yeah, that is a big problem, because wing-backs are basically not really wingers and not really full-backs, and Ange Postecoglou uses full-backs who invert, and he uses touchline-hugging wingers, so... I think there's going to be quite a bit of a problem in terms of who they can fit into the positions that he would usually utilise.
Whether it's solvable in one transfer window.
The thing is, like we say, you can go through Spurs' squad and say, oh, well, look, we've got Ndombele here, Lo Celso here. That's the problem. The problem is a lot of these players were sort of frozen out by previous managers, and so they technically are Spurs players, but I don't think it's necessarily the case that they're going to want to come back and try and help Spurs solve the problems of their own making. So there are players there who could help them out.
You've tickled Seb.
Literally, I was actually just tickling.
Now, they can't see what happens below the table there,
not
lads.
Not in the live show.
Talk about a toxic work environment. Yeah, okay, listen, we're going to move on to a different question asked by Roger. And this is a specific one for Alex Stewart. Does data actually matter at all in recruitment? It's hard to know whether it's a question or a dig at you.
Yeah, it feels kind of like both, doesn't it? I think it matters a lot less than you might think it does. And it's interesting, like Spurs is a good example. You can look at some of those players and think, oh, they're actually really good at X or Y, but it's about creating a blend. It's about how they respond to a manager coming in. I think one of the things that's really interesting is that football had its kind of Moneyball moment. Everyone got really excited. The media didn't help with that. And now that I'm not in the media, I can say that.
You're no longer held by the cabal, the conspiracy.
Right, exactly.
We have weekly meetings. They're very exciting.
And at the start of each one, they say, you can subscribe to the...
Yeah. When they cut off my subscription when I left, and I was gutted. I had to start paying for it.
Your membership to the cabal.
At The Athletic, if you're an employee, you don't even get a subscription for life, do you?
Not as the next one. No,
did you get it back?
Yeah, I pay for it.
Yeah.
And I watch all your videos. No, I do have the hoodie, though. That's really the
most important bit.
I think football got really carried away with the idea of data and then realized that actually because it wasn't solvable in the same way that baseball was, it's actually a lot more complicated. So while there are people doing clever things, you can't kind of summarize football in the same way that you can with baseball. So a lot of people are throwing a lot of money at stuff that doesn't actually work all that well. And I work for an analytics company, so this is kind of really stupid of me to say.
Who are these people and what are they paying for?
Yeah. Well, no, there are definitely some things that are good.
Is there anyone that you personally dislike in the data community?
I think you've got your own list, Seb, but we'll...
I suspect we could compare notes. And yeah, it's weirdly... I think because analytics came out of the blogging community, there's a lot of people on Twitter who are still really punchy about being kind of, you know, taken as like XG nerds and stuff, and they get really combative about it.
It's also fair to say, though, isn't it, that you know, we think about football as one big amorphous thing, but actually, depending on what club you're at, it seems to be crazy different, right? So you might have a team that has a really incredible recruitment department, a data analytics department, you know, young people who are amazing, but they're just not listened to by one person.
Yeah.
And then it's irrelevant, right? Whereas at a different club, I'm sure all of those things work and, you know, it's...
So like, Tony Bloom at Brighton is a really great example because what he's done more than anything... And, yeah, he's brought analytics in because his background is in gambling and so on, but he's got the rest of the club to go, yeah, okay, this is the right way to do stuff. And we, like, years and years ago, we did a pod with a guy called Nikos Overhaul. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good podcast, that one.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because that's an example of the sort of podcast that this podcast will become after we abandon the format.
Okay. So, like, a long, in-depth interview thing with a dynamic, vibrant host.
That's what it's going to be,
still
right?
It!
Talking to people who know what they're talking about.
Oh!
Good for you.
There'll be a fight outside afterwards, don't worry. Hang around by the tube station, you'll see.
But the point Nikos was making on that was it's about getting buy-in. And you can throw all the money in the world at getting clever data and buying in all of the right stuff and creating huge teams. And there's an arms race in data like there is in recruitment generally and buying the best players and spending the most wages. But if the club aren't interested, if there's a schism between the coaching staff and the recruitment staff, it's completely pointless.
Yeah, okay. Anyone else got anything to add to that, data and football?
I was going to say as well, it very much depends what level you're at the club who has the recruitment department that uses data. Because
what level are you at?
Seven.
Seven?
But, for example, we've talked about Real Madrid signing... Well, we were supposed to talk about Real Madrid signing Bellingham, but we didn't. But you don't need a data recruitment department to tell you that Jude Bellingham is good at football.
That's true. I could have said that.
Exactly. So,
and
whereas
I'm
a team
idiot.
Like Brighton, as we've mentioned, what they're doing is actually much smarter, but they have the ability to do that, right? So they can. Their model is based around buying players in and then loaning them out until they get to the level which they can play for Brighton. And so what they're trying to do is get ahead of the curve on the players who will become much more expensive. So there are ways of using data in recruitment that I think work quite well. But again, it depends on the level of the team they're at. If you're in the Premier League, you know that you're going to be paying a huge deficit on players because of the amount of money that is in the league, and it will be interesting to see if Brighton lose a little bit of edge in the markets because of that, because they aren't going to be able to buy those players in cheap farm them out to different leagues until they're at a level where they can.
Do you think it's interesting, John? Like, when if you're Brighton, or if you're,
I'm not Brighton.
You are not Brighton. No,
John Seven,
presumably. if Brighton are after one of your players, so you're.
I don't have any players.
But if you did, if you had a little group of players, okay. And you were, and you
there's that dynamism. It's right there, isn't it? He's got it in his locker. Sorry, please continue.
And if Brighton were trying to buy one of your players, would you not think, hang on, I'm being shafted? Because they've identified some hidden metric, some underappreciated aspect of this player that I'm not charging them for. Does that eventually become a little bit of a, I don't know, problem, but hindrance?
I think that clubs, if they're being approached by Brighton for one of their players, I mean, they'll be happy to sell players to Brighton because they'll get much more money than they would do if they were selling somewhere else.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think there's any hidden metrics now. Like if you have enough money, you can buy all of the information that's available. And there are a few clubs like Liverpool created a kind of individual model that gave them an edge for a while. But that model has been replicated now by other clubs. I think one of the things that Brighton does that's really interesting is position-specific scouting.
What does that mean?
So, well, it's position-specific and it's scouting. Thank you for saying
that. Do you remember when you were in the podcast and every now and again you just used to get a little sort of a prompting question that you'd run with and you'd take on?
Yes,
and
I've lost the
That dynamic. Was one of those,
totally. Okay.
Wasn't it?
I'm back in the game now. So obviously data is part of it, but video is super important and position-specific elements are really important. So scouting centre-backs, for example, harder than any other position. And so what Brighton do is, because they have a system that they use, they have, you know, a similar kind of management, they know roughly what sort of style they're going to be playing, they create scouting units for each position. So that's a combination of data and video, and those people are experts on strikers or goalkeepers or centre-backs. And that adds a real level of sophistication to what they're doing. So, like, the examples are all out there. It's whether clubs can be asked to do it and can get the buy-in throughout the club in order to do it.
So is that a profession now, to be a winger-specific data scientist? Is that a vocation?
Probably not with a data scientist, no. Okay. But certainly with scouting, it makes sense. Oh. And if people are interested in analytics and going into that side of stuff, it's a really good way of doing it. Also looking at women's football and starting to push into that, because there's quite a deficit at the moment in skills in that area. So, again, the data is out there. You can get stuff off things like FB Ref and so on. Just that's the way to go.
We shouldn't have sacked him. He's quite interesting.
I'm thinking the very same thing. I'm just trying to remember why I sacked him. It seems so right at the time.
Yeah. I could talk about it, but the NDA hasn't expired.
Yeah, so. Another couple of years.
It was something to do with tickling, though.
No. I do love to tickle. Now, here's a question that's come in from Matthew. It's for you, John. It's, what T-shirt are you wearing?
Oh. I'm wearing a...
Remember to speak into your microphone. I know it's hard to do two things at once, isn't it?
Sorry, what?
How about you, woof?
Do you remember from the first half about the woof? Yeah, it's because when he woofs, it's, will you woof for us now? This woman's never seen you woof. Imagine what a difference to her life it's going to make if she sees you. Would you like to hear John McKenzie woof? The people have spoken, John.
I'm a serious football analyst. I'm level 7. That's the last one. No more.
What a fucking stupid thing to make a man do.
It's so stupid.
Anyway, on the topic of John's T-shirts, we've prepared something that John didn't know about. It's Ruben, the baby boy's Pinders. It's his next time to shine here, Ruben. We've got a couple of different T-shirts that John's worn, outfits before. Yeah, we're going to look at the screen. You can see on the TVs as well. Ruben, will you flip to the first one? Oh, that's nice, isn't it? What's that one, John? What's that? That's a football shirt?
That's FC Goa, that is.
That's nice.
My auntie goes on holiday there every year and brings me a shirt back.
Your auntie goes on holiday to FC Goa?
That's right.
It's a very niche holiday, isn't it? What's the next one, Ruben? Oh, well, that's nice, isn't it? Yeah, what about that one?
I know the punchline here.
Yeah, well, you play along.
I already don't like it.
Okay, we'll go to the next one. What's the next one?
Oh, he has a Goblins t-shirt. Hey, look at that, a lovely Goblins t-shirt. But I think there's one more, isn't there, John? I think there's one more that Ruben's going to flip to now. Good Lord. What happened here? A fascist-inspired football analysis? Very ill-advised. I'd like to tell the audience, this happened when I was out of the office, otherwise I would have put a stop to it immediately. It is not a policy of The Athletic to allow our employees to dress up as Hitler, but, you know...
This was my fault, this one.
Yeah, what happened?
This is what happens when your videographers are so young they don't remember the Nazis.
What are you wearing on your arm?
That's a Brentford captain's armband.
And are you the Brentford captain?
I'm level 7. No, you've literally cooked this one up overnight. You're like, we didn't humiliate him enough last night.
I love to see your surprise face. Don't worry, there's more humiliation for you later. And actually, there's a question directed at you now, John, a very serious question, because Jeff from the audience knows that you're a serious football analyst. Would Man United, this is a really good question, would Man United get more value out of a striker for next season or by replacing their goalkeeper? And this is under the assumption that they could only do one of those things.
Yeah, my personal take on this is that it's much more valuable to have a striker scoring goals. And I think that...
We'll come to you next, Alex, for the rebuttal. Very exciting. But go ahead, John.
I think Manchester United have done really well this season getting into the top four without having a number nine, a dedicated number nine. I know they've had Marcus Rashford sort of carrying them on the goal-scoring front a little bit. But I think that we've seen... I think they've overperformed this season off the back of Rashford's performances. And I think if you can bring in a number nine who can take a lot of that burden off him, then you'll see those sorts of numbers again next season. So I personally think that it's much easier to bring in a number nine and overperform than it is to bring in a goalkeeper and overperform. Obviously, they have a problem with goalkeepers, and the build-up is an issue. But this season, they've essentially just not bothered trying to build up as much. They've just gone over opposition presses, and they've finished in the top four. So I think, yeah, I would go with number nine.
Alex, you were shaking your head at the beginning. What do you think?
I think values are part of it. Goalkeepers are going to cost you less, and they're going to cost you less in wages.
So they cost Man United less, though? Because Man United seems to spend £100 million on every player, whoever they are.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not very bright, are they? I think that you... The issue is, you're absolutely right, you're more likely to get overperformance from a striker than you are from a goalkeeper, for sure. Is that value, though? And the aspect, like, goals prevented are kind of worth more than goals scored, ultimately. It's like... It's a bit reductive, but it does kind of work. And also, in terms of the kind of confidence of that back unit, I think if you're Man United, God, I've answered this badly. If you're Man United, you're looking to, like, redevelop strength of mind. And that starts at the back. That starts with the goalkeeper being solid, playing passes that are not going to expose defenders who may be in a crisis of confidence, and so on and so forth. You can score goals from anywhere on the pitch, but in order to build a cohesive defensive unit, you need to start with a keeper.
I agree with this, but I think in the long run...
Just interrupt him, JJ.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Where can you score from?
Well, I mean any position.
Left back.
Left back score goals?
No, but if you're the back end of the pitch... It's far away.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen goalkeepers score goals, right? Like, it happens.
Yes.
It doesn't happen often, granted.
I'm afraid you've won.
A big round of applause for Alex Stewart there for winning the bout. Yes, delightful.
Can we do it? Can we ask the audience what they think?
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. Let me test from the audience. And now this is in the assumption that they can only buy one player. Do Man United buy hands up for a goalkeeper? That's some hands and one woo. And hands up for a striker.
It's kind of even.
It's sort of dead even split, isn't it?
Kind of even.
And that's a really good indication of the kind of nerds that have come here this evening. The kind of people that would say a fucking goalkeeper is better than a striker. What's wrong with you? Do you remember when you used to like football as a child? You used to enjoy watching when they scored a goal. It's good when they score a goal, isn't it? Yeah, not a fucking goalkeeper, mate. Jesus Christ. Anyway, okay. Here's a question that comes in from Robin. JJ, what do you think the top four will look like next season in the Premier League? Do you think it'll be different or the same?
I think one team will be one. It's going to change, though.
Who's going to win?
The one that's in one. So, obviously, we think City's going to win the league again, right? Probably forever.
Probably.
It's not quite as bad as you're going to get in other leagues where, I mean, Germany is never going to change forever and ever and ever. Scotland, kind of the same. Room my own league as well. It's also done.
Yeah.
And you got the other ones. But then you'll get, like, Chelsea, I think, will be a lot better next season. I can see Pochettino sorting out a lot of that nonsense.
Do you think good enough of top four?
Well, there's not a top four now. There's only four spaces you really want to be in. But there is actually a top seven. And I think a lot of clubs and fans and managers and directors will have to reassess what success is. So if you're a Spurs, for example, not to like just absolutely destroy you here, but the like if you want to be a top four club, Spurs aren't now, because what you've got at the top obviously is Man City, and they're very hard to get rid of. Arsenal will be there or thereabouts, but it's really tough now because Man United will probably improve in this summer by buying either a goalkeeper or a striker. And that'll make them better. Then Liverpool will come back, and we know they're quite good. And did they sign McAllister today? Is that what's happened?
Yes, it's from the audience. Yeah.
I'm hard on the news. And so that's happened. That'll make them better. They'll sign some other people. Jude Bellingham, is he around? Is he?
He went to Real Madrid, didn't he? They're in that other league.
I was trying to do a bit, but didn't get a laugh.
What about Newcastle, though? I mean, like, Newcastle, I think we all think they're ahead of schedule finishing in the top four this season.
Well, they're difficult because they're well ahead. They've definitely arrived. They're well ahead of schedule. But they've got so much money they could invest. Obviously, it depends on what they're able to do with financial shenanigans or whatever, like moving money around to get people in that they
and
can
afford.
Sure
play,
you,
Jacob,
do make sure you buy our book on the topic. Yeah. We do have a book about it's called, no, it's Chapter 7, Financial Chapter Shenanigans, seven. And so their thing, so, but they'll have Champions League football now, and a lot of their football this season has been played out of the pitch, because 52% of the time they have the ball in play, right? So someone else smarter than me figured that out. And so a lot of the time they're playing in really short bursts, so they can be very intense, and that's how they're able to go really at teams, they can play very direct, cause them a lot of hassle, and be real jerks, and that's how they do it. And so if you then have a Sunday night game, then a Wednesday night game, then a Saturday, then a Tuesday, and whatever, and then League Cup or whatever they have, that'll change what you can do. You have to change your squad around. And we saw at Arsenal how they fell apart later on when they didn't have the depth. They need to bring in better players. But they can't just sign squad players now. They have to sign ones who are good enough for the first team that can get, like, force Joe Willock to stay in the team. Yeah. And so that's really hard to do because no one wants to come in and be second choice rather than first. So, yes.
Oh, sorry, you're finished. Sorry, was
it? It'll be different. Yeah.
You caught me on my hind heels there, but thank you very much to JJ Bull.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Question from the audience here. Roy Hodgson has a question, apparently. Ruben, are you back there?
Yeah, hello.
Have you got Roy with you?
Yeah, one sec. Let me just go. Well, I never left, Joe.
Are you enjoying the show, Roy?
It's terrific. Really is.
Now, what did you want to ask us that we could possibly answer for you?
Well, to be honest, I just want to know if I've still got a job come August. I'm in limbo.
I'm really sorry. I don't know. I can't help you. I don't. Because I'm not. I don't own Crystal Palace. But would you like to stay for next season?
I'd love to stay. As long as Wilfred Zaha stays, I would love to stay. That's not Roy, that's just me.
Well, thank you very much. A big round of applause there to Ruben Pinder and his terrific Roy Hodgson, his friend back there. Almost feel bad for cancelling the show format on account of how good Ruben Pinder is, isn't it? But, you know, it kind of makes it more funny as well. Best of luck with your career, Ruben.
Now, at least we can have Roy on for the first
that's
interview.
That's true, we can have Roy for the first interview.
It's definitely Roy.
That'd be a weird thing to do for a whole hour. Just play it completely straight.
Hey, man, I'd listen to that.
Yeah, I'd listen to that too. Okay. Now, we've got a very special guest here this evening who doesn't know that I'm about to talk about him. My Uncle Damien is here.
Hey!
I don't know where he is. Is that you there, Uncle Damien?
There he is.
Big wave.
Hello, Damien.
Lovely to see you. Thank you for coming. Are you enjoying the show so far, Uncle Damien? He's loving it. Isn't that nice? Now, as many people who have listened to the show before will know, and I'll address you directly now as someone who hasn't, that's my Uncle Damien in real life. He's my real blood relative uncle. And he owns a wonderful theatre pub in Angel Islington. It's called the Old Red Lion Theatre. There you go. Big cheers for the Old Red. And as discussed many times on this podcast before, it is the best place in London to watch football. And if that's not enough to convince you, a few months ago, JJ Bull made a lovely little feature all about the Old Red Lion. And Ruben Pinder is going to pop it on the screen now for us to watch and enjoy. So enjoy the Old Red Lion.
Come on down to the Old Red Lion Theatre pub in sunny Angel Town, London. It's the best pub in London to watch the football. It has everything you could possibly need. Chairs, tables, a dog, screens, beer, more beer, other drink items, and a garden where you might run into friendly Uncle Damien.
I told you to stop food.
But there's even more. The Red Lion is full of history. And you can get a drink while you're there from friendly Stan.
Oh, I'm Stan.
Thanks, Stan.
Stan's gone
now. So get
now.
On down to the Old Red Lion Theatre Pub in Angel, London. What do you say, Uncle Damien?
The Old Red Lion is the best pub to watch sport in London.
Hey! Yeah! A terrific performance from a very old man. Well done, Uncle Damien. But you've got, there's a captive audience here, Uncle Damien, because we never really know how many of the people we're speaking to on the podcast live in London. But most of you do, don't you? Because you've come here. What a stupid idea to come here. But listen, go to the Old Red Lion next season, watch the football there, and spend some money in Uncle Damien's pub. Yeah. Well, we've got some more questions now. We've got a few minutes left of the show, another 10 minutes or so. And some of these more audience questions. Liam has asked, what's next for Graham Potter? Seb, what's next for Graham Potter?
Graham Potter needs to go somewhere where he can have a bit of a project. Like, not like, that sounds like he's going to have an allotment or something. No, I mean,
would be nice, though.
Somewhere where, like, he doesn't...
You could grow your own veg.
You know, live off the land, you know, yeah.
You could run the haunted house.
I don't know, he's a bit too formulaic, isn't he?
He's not spooky.
No, he's not. He's not a sort of like... Neil Warnock could run a haunted house. 100%.
Yeah. Graham Sean Potter, Dyche?
No, Dyche...
He'd be the noise in the background.
No, because Dyche would just... He'd attack you. He's not subtle enough for the ghost house slash...
That bit would have been cut out of the podcast as well, where Seb said that Sean Dyche would attack you. That's... But what about Graham Potter?
He needs to manage in the choir. He needs what Graham Potter built his reputation in places where he wasn't expected to succeed. So he didn't have hysterical fan bases jumping down his throat every time he drew away from home or wasn't immediately successful with a new signing. He needs to go somewhere where there's a process, where he can put together a team around him, where he can align all the departments within a club and put together a football side rather than kind of be the answer to a problem, if that makes sense, Josh.
So, yeah. Do you think that Frank Lampard has saved Graham Potter's career in the future?
I feel like that question, that feels like it needs an extra bullet point, that question.
I thought it was a good question.
No, it's not that it's a bad question, John. It's just it needs a little bit of a sort of a tickle towards a definition.
Because I think a real data analyst answered that question.
Because Frank Lampard's Chelsea were shit.
Yes. Which one? Because he had two of them. Yeah.
Frank Lampard the second.
Yes. Yeah. I still don't understand the question. Like,
so people thought
you're going to have to get better at this if you're going to host the podcast for next season, because if Seb doesn't understand your question, rephrase it.
I won't be interviewing Seb, it'll be fine.
No, that's true.
I have a very expensive education, so...
You can pay for someone else to
that's
take
it. That's why he feels so comfortable telling you you're wrong in the way you've asked it. Tommy Node from the audience asked, where does Xabi Alonso rank in the current crop of former pros moving into management? What do you think? Alex Stewart, you're nodding.
Yeah, he's really good. Mm. Yeah, he's got the right sort of pedigree. He's worked with a lot of good coaches before. The way Sociedad have been playing is really fun. He's come through that system with some experience. and then off to Leverkusen. Yeah, good. Just checking.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I wasn't listening to what you were saying.
But it sounded... I wasn't checking with you.
Oh, you weren't even talking to me. I've interrupted for no reason at all. I'll go away again.
That you just sort of nod and smile, and I'll just like, yeah. Okay.
Occasionally, he just tells you that you're being boring. Like when John, when Joe and I
boring.
Like post pandemic. Imagine that in our editorial meetings, you're having a Zoom call with Joe, yeah. And he's, oh, you know, what should we put on the Illustrated channel? And you come up with an idea about, you know, sort of something in Chile or Uruguay, and let's do this. And he gets that sort of, he's doing it now.
You left a key word out of your bit, though, when you said you come up with an idea. What you meant to say was you come up with a shit, boring idea. And then you expect me to waste half an hour telling you you've done a good job. Come on, man.
And then you
a little bit of real slipped out there, didn't it? That felt very real. And it was. It was real, Seb.
And then your big rubbery face leans into the Zoom call.
No.
I am a Zoom leaner. I am a victim of England. Zoom leaner. Okay, fine. Here's a good question. George Brown, rubbery face. Is it rubbery? No, this man shook his head. He said, I've got a nice face.
Which one?
That one there. He's put his hand over his eyes now. He doesn't like it when we talk to him.
The guy wearing the Arteta t-shirt.
That's true.
No, come on.
Yeah, it's irrelevant, isn't it?
Okay, I've worn that t-shirt on a video before as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you also dress as a Nazi, so let's come on.
Which means he's probably a Nazi, right? That's how it works. Do you really want to dress like this man? That's you, that is.
Fucking hell. Okay, here's a good one. George Brown asks, as a Liverpool fan, how good is Alexis McAllister, really? Who wants that one? Almost as though the news happened today and no one's prepared.
I have an opinion. I can do it.
Well, of course you have an opinion. Do you want to share it?
Yeah.
Go on then.
So we were talking about Brighton earlier, and we were talking about scouting and data. What's really interesting is what happens when you get a smart club buying players, and the player develops, everyone starts liking them, and somebody comes along and spends a fantastic amount of money buying them, and then they're shit afterwards. It's like, it's the kind of the Mark Cucurella conundrum, if you want. Like, that's... I think Alexis McAllister is a really good player, but it's a good opportunity to introduce that and just to say, like, that's something to watch out for, because the big club with all the money doesn't necessarily know what it is that they're buying or why it is that that's worked at a different club. And that's kind of... That's Brighton, because everyone's going to go after... I want a McAllister and a Matoma and probably a Lewis Dunk if he's still there, and maybe I'll sign... Estepina and the fullback, and this is going to happen. Players are going to get sold off. Tony Bloom's going to make huge amounts of money as always, and then you're going to get sort of £60 million white elephants all over the Premier League.
The other version of this is when people do like a similarity thing, and they're like, oh, so we can't afford that fella, but we like him, so let's try and find the, I don't know, Zweite Bundesliga equivalent of such and such a player, and that's just a fool's errand, really.
Stupid, aren't they, football clubs? Really stupid.
I was just doing some research on Alexis McAllister for the podcast.
Oh, yeah?
And there's a guy called Kevin McAllister. This is real.
Yeah.
But he's you know who that is,
but
right?
He's a bit cheaper.
No, who's that?
Have you seen Home Alone?
Oh.
So Kevin McAllister, who tortured some burglars... He had turned out to be some sort of, I think he's a midfielder for Argentina. He's a defender. Oh, of course he's a defender. He's defending his home. So that makes sense. And now he plays for Argentinos Juniors. That was good, wasn't it, John?
I like that bit, yeah.
Thank you.
The John McKenzie seal of approval there.
I need
okay.
It always, yeah.
Now we're going to move towards the last stage of the show. It's been long, hasn't it? We're all ready to go home, aren't we? Yeah, going to go home, watch something on the telly that was better than this. Enjoy it more. And probably pay less for it. Well done. Tom, at the back, can I ask you to move back to the lovely bossa nova music and the mood lighting? And we've got a few comments now. It's nice, mood lighting.
Yeah, that's nice.
We've got a few comments that are a bit meaner than the ones that I read out before. And I'm going to ask you guys to read them about yourselves. And John, I'm very sorry, John. But we're starting with you, John. So have a look there. Jordan, what's Jordan said?
John is a strange little man.
What's happening on the screen, Ruben? We've already seen this video. Is Roy fucking around back there?
I think we really nailed that one.
Yeah, we did. Say it anyway, though.
John is a strange little man.
That's very true, isn't it? And the next one, Set Ibalo says...
Baldy with glasses clearly has...
Now, just to be clear, because we do have two baldy with glasses here, but I checked all of these, and they are specific to the person in question, so, but a very good catch, because of course there's also... What's the next one, John, from Mole Man?
Sour leads baldy.
Mole Man getting sour in there as well, that's, yeah.
Do you know, before I joined TIFO, I didn't realise I was bald. Those YouTube comments have been so useful to me.
And the last one for John here, coming in from S-Car. What does S-Car say, John?
John is dangerously stupid.
Round of applause for John for being a good sport there. Well done, John McKenzie. Now, the rest of the panel shouldn't feel too safe, and specifically you, JJ, because you are up next. Although I have to say, it was a lot harder to find mean comments about you. I'm not sure whether it's because people really like you or because people really hate John, but it's maybe it's somewhere
not,
in the middle.
I think it's more, not bald, isn't it?
I think it's more that they don't care at all about me and they really dislike John.
Well, some people do, because Matthew Powsland said what, JJ?
JJ seems downbeat and also potentially hungover.
Never a truer word spoken on the stage at the Leicester Square Theatre in that case. The next comment from Luis Barbosa, what do they say?
JJ starts every point with Football Manager or Aberdeen. Guess what I'm literally playing right now? I showed John some of my Wrexham team earlier in this podcast. Some João Neves, he's very good.
The next comment comes from Herman Kermit Varm. Herman Kermit Varm? JJ, what do they say?
Is the big announcement you're replacing resident Wafflebot and failed surfer? Yep. JJ, talk a load of bollocks bull with someone who actually matured past the age of 15 and has some sort of idea about football. Well, Herman Kermit Warm, I'm in the Premier League with Wrexham. What do you know?
Failed surfer really nails it, doesn't it? It's like he's really got to your core with that one. But Seb Stafford-Blore, we come to you now, and you can read them off my laptop here. Seb, what does this first one say?
Seb Halford's floor.
Yeah, that's true. And then this next one?
Seb Lambo's door.
Yeah. What about this one?
Seb Sandy Tart's gore.
Yeah. And here's a nice one for you from Harrison Grant.
Is this in Spanish, this one?
It's possible. Or it's possible they're asking why.
Is that him just trying to differentiate me from John? As in an X and Y, baldy Y boring.
Yeah,
baldy
why?
And boring.
Why boring? Exactly the same thing I ask on an almost daily basis.
Use a comma, why? Harrison Grant. Use a comma.
Why so boring? There we go. And just to be clear, I did check that video and John wasn't on it, so he's definitely talking about Seb, the other baldy. Here's the last one from you, from Areeb. What does Areeb say about you?
Seb was actually somewhat bearable this time. Well done, Seb. But hopefully we'll have JJ back next week.
And hopefully we will. Yeah. Yeah, very exciting. We've got one here for Steve Hankey as well, all the way there on his own table. Steve, can you read the next one from John Gillian?
Oh, yeah, okay. John Gillian says, the content is as good... as the audio is bad.
Oh, that's tough, isn't it? Because that's quite literally your profession. That's what you get paid to do.
Yeah.
These people, they're not paid to be bold. You know, Steve.
Can't control that either. However, 1 year ago, I wasn't on the show a year ago.
And may I tell you who normally edits the podcast when there isn't a producer?
Hoisted by your own petard.
Whoops. Well, it seems only fair I read some about myself as well, I suppose, then, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well,
You've prepared these for me.
Yeah, I did actually manage to get some. I mean, I got told last minute you were doing these, so I managed to find some for you.
Just some?
Well, there were some that were really mean, and so I didn't, I didn't put them in.
The ones about rubbery faces, wasn't it?
That's not even at the... that's a seven.
First one. Joe seems like an annoying individual. It's true. That one's very true.
Yeah.
I love Joe's ability to sound like he knows exactly what he's talking about and that he doesn't have a clue at the same time. That's kind of a compliment.
Again, I have removed...
the really bad
ones. They are mean, so...
Had to turn it off when Joe started his rant on working with kids. I don't remember that. Can't you get a less annoying host? The content is great, but he just ruins everything. Joe needs to stop being Tifo's asshole, or I'm unsubscribing. Like listening to a velvet voice Piers Morgan. Joe needs to stop trying to talk like Alan Partridge. It's been really noticeable that cuts to my core. That's just that one's just cruel.
Do you know how you always go for smoking breaks?
You sound like you've been smoking for 100 years. Oh, here's a nice one. This host is really annoying. VAR is a good step, and he's just anti-development.
And then Joe replied to it.
I replied to this one 3 years ago. That's true. I hate development of all kinds. Sorry for being so annoying. From Joe. Okay. Oh, you've literally... there's so many of these. Joe
I only
looks
have
like
two more.
Ed Miliband's younger brother.
Yeah. I got one more for you.
Joe, do you ever feel shame when editing? No. No, I don't. Well, there we go. Those are all the mean comments.
Hope you like that.
Yeah, hope you like that. I think that brings us towards the end of the Tifo Football Podcast live show. Thank you so much to everybody for attending this evening. It's a real pleasure to have you here. It really is. And I'd like to say... oh, that's good. Cheer for JJ's phone, yeah. I'd like to say a huge thank you also to Steve Hanke, for whom this is his last show with us as well. It's been absolutely delightful to work with Steve Hanke. We've really enjoyed it, and we wish you all the best for what promises to be an obviously absolutely massively successful future career for Steve Hanke. So a big round of applause for Steve.
Thank you.
I've been hosting this podcast for 6 years now, and I'm fucking tired.
And you look like Ed Miliband's little brother.
But I'm genuinely excited to bring to you what comes next, which will mostly be under the helm of John McKenzie here. We've got some stuff prepared for next season already. We're going to do a few podcasts between now and then, which will be related to Sensible Transfers, which will be really, really cool. John's going to do an absolutely terrific job. I'm going to drop back in from time to time as well to interview people. Only people I want to, though. Not fucking boring people, but only people I've chosen. So it won't be the last time you see me. But I would like to say thank you, because it's been really fun to do this for 6 years. And it's, you know, ridiculous that there are so many people who have spent real money to come and watch us. and go home and watch something better on TV. But thank you so much to everyone in the audience here today for joining the journey with us. It was great fun. And as we leave the stage, a huge round of applause to Seb Stafford-Bloor, John McKenzie, JJ Ball, Alex Stewart, Steve Hankey, and Roy Hodgson!
The Athletic.